United States.
Let me include myself and thank you very much for your service to the court and to your client. You've done well. As long as I'm on the subject, may I say to Mr. Ackerman, I've never seen a better picture of sartorial splendor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coffee, good morning.
I'm Alan Ackerman. I represent Peter Gudis. We are asking the court to vacate the order below, which rejected his motion to withdraw his guilty plea. Peter Gudis is now 72. He's in federal custody. He had practiced law for many years, since 1964. In the mid-1990s, he happened upon some clients. Turns out that they were miscreants, as a result of which he and they were charged with multiple offenses in October 2001. During the pretrial proceedings, if you will, the government was able to determine that Mr. Lourdes did not steal $200,000 from a client fund account. As a result of that, 3 or 4 days before trial, a plea agreement was tendered, and it carried a 0-6 month potential sentence. It also carried a paragraph involving an appellate waiver. Mr. Lourdes entered a guilty plea, which the court did not at the time accept, on October 30, 2002. The district court then commenced trying the co-defendant's case.
Hold back a minute, Mr. Ackerman. Did he give a reason for rejecting the plea agreement?
The court please, the answer is yes. The district court filed a lengthy memorandum opinion, which I've reproduced in a joint appendix. Among the reasons he cited were the plea agreement did not satisfy the district court's findings that the relevant conduct underlying the co-defendant's conduct was attributable or potentially attributable to Mr. Gudis.
This is when he first, this is before the trial.
Correct. No, sir. This is after the trial.
No, I meant when he rejected the first plea agreement. Did he give a reason?
He rejected the plea agreement after the trial, Your Honor.
Aha.
And the reason he rejected the plea agreement, as near as we can tell, was that he was less than enchanted with what he heard during trial about Mr. Lourdes. The tragic circumstances, whatever else they may be, Mr. Lourdes wasn't on trial. He did not confront the witnesses. He did not participate in the trial. So now, if you have a series of co-defendants with an empty chair who happens to be a liar, the natural defense, if you will, is to blame the empty chair for that which occurred in the case. And in part, eventually, this court will find that that's part of the defense argument during trial. At any rate, the district court not only rejected the motion to withdraw the guilty plea, but he rejected the plea agreement. And now the question I believe that is important here is what are the reasons that could arguably support all of this? And let us set aside all the artificial barriers. Let's look at reality. Reality is that somebody pleads guilty to a superseding information, one count, with the clear impression the sentence will be 0 to 6 months. The district court decides that's not right. So in January 2003, the district court, number one, accepts the plea, which it had not done 3 months earlier. Number two, disregards the original PSR, which supported the plea agreement. And turns around and orders a new PSR.
Did he disregard it or just not agree with it?
I'll use Your Honor's words. He disagreed with it. But the independent PSR supported the plea agreement.
Yes. Okay.
In due course, in a very short period thereafter, Lourdes sought permission to withdraw his guilty plea. Now, he didn't just write one page and submit it to the district court. R-238, which is a separate folio of record here, is that motion with supporting exhibits. And it lays out the fact that, look, Judge, I'm actually innocent of this. I'm actually innocent of the superseding information false statement to a bank charge. But beyond that, you didn't tell me that I was giving up my right to appeal. You didn't tell me that the plea agreement, if rejected, would not now allow me to go to trial. In other words,
did he sign the plea agreement?
He certainly did, Judge.
And he's a lawyer.
Yes, Your Honor, he is. A civil lawyer with absolutely no criminal experience.
Did he read the plea agreement?
According to the October 30 minutes, of which I've appended to our joint appendix, the answer is yes.
Yes, and he answered yes, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
And did he say that he understood it?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
And is that the end of the story, Judge Coffey?
Pardon me?
Should that be the end of the...
No, I just asked it. I just wanted to make sure that you wanted to bring that out. I know you wanted us to hear all sides of it.
The court's entitled to the candor of our counsel.
Right.
And absolutely, he did those things.
If this plea agreement had set a specific time frame, either zero or any number of months between, then we'd be in a different ballgame, wouldn't we?
Yes, Your Honor. If I may, what's truly puzzling here is that my opponent talks about the totality of circumstances, because, Judge Coffey, really that's what you're talking about, the totality of circumstances involving the plea. Well, what about the totality of circumstances on the motion to withdraw the plea? Should there be a different rule? If it's good enough for the government to say, look to the totality of circumstances to support the guilty plea, should the accused have the right to ask the court, look to the totality of circumstances while moving to vacate the plea? I suggest to you the answer is yes, and the totality of circumstances here, plea rejection, and what we call, and it may not be totally fair, in the brief we call it a breach, but what the government did is fundamentally repudiate the plea agreement that they entered into, because when it became clear that the district court was going to impose an enhanced sentence, the government said, okay. Instead of turning around and saying, oh, the judge, this plea agreement mandates that we'll recommend 0 to 6 months.
Had not the plea agreement been rejected by the court?
Yes, Your Honor.
So that then, in effect, there was no plea agreement.
Well, according to the court, there is.
As between prosecution and defense.
The district court wanted to bind Mr. Hattis to the plea agreement, but relieved the government from the responsibility.
It was his problem, not theirs. Yes, I see what you're talking about.
Thank you.
Thank you, and I am.
Mr. Ackman, your glasses are on the podium.
Thank you, Judge.
He usually puts them on top of his forehead, so they just...
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Chris O'Talling, and I'm here today representing the United States. I'd like to, first of all, address a few of, I guess, the timeline that defense counsel suggested at the beginning of his statement with respect to what happened with the plea, the entry of the plea, as well as the whether or not the district court judge rejected the plea agreement. I think that the record is clear on this point, and I think Judge Hart, when confronted with many of these issues, addressed it head on. On October 30th, 2002, Mr. Lewis came into court, entered into a Rule 11 plea colloquy with respect to the superseding information that was filed against him. During the course of that plea, Judge Hart indicated that he was going to accept the guilty plea. And in fact, that is what is reflected in the district court's minute order shortly following the Rule 11 plea colloquy. It specifically says that the court was to enter the finding of guilty. During the course of the plea colloquy, then he suggested that he was going to defer whether or not he was going to accept the plea agreement until after he had the benefit of reviewing the pre-sentence investigation report. So, following the October 30, 2002 plea colloquy, there's an entry of the finding of guilty pursuant to the plea agreement, and then subsequent to that, after he initially received the pre-sentence investigation report, the judge indicated in the course of his written opinion that he was going to accept the plea agreement. That is specifically referenced in the I believe it's the January 23rd.
He carried a 0 to 6 months.
I beg your pardon, Your Honor?
He carried a 0 to 6 months.
The plea agreement,
yes,
did say that there was an agreement, there was a preliminary guideline calculation,
right,
included,
right,
within the plea agreement,
right,
that did reflect a 0 to 6 guideline range. It projected 0 to 6 guideline range. But going back to what in the district court's memorandum opinion and order, the judge specifically stated that he had earlier accepted the guilty plea, and then at the end of January 23rd, he was accepting the plea agreement. So, when defense counsel suggests the district court judge rejected the plea agreement, that's simply not the case.
He rejected it after the trial. That is the agreement of 0 to 6 months.
The trial of the co-defendants took place.
Between the time of the plea and the time of the sentencing of this.
Yeah, it took place between October 30th, 2002, when the plea was entered.
Based on information that came out during that trial, it led the judge to think that the 0 to 6 months was inappropriate.
Correct. He made a determination that the findings of the $11 million fraud that was revealed during the course of the trial of the co-defendants should be attributed as relevant conduct to Mr. Lotus in his sentencing calculations. He did make that finding, but nevertheless, he did specifically indicate that he was accepting the plea agreement. He was just disagreeing with certain aspects of the calculations that were contained therein.
I'm having trouble with how this fits into the Rule 11, because it is a 11C1C agreement, isn't it? That is, the government agrees that a specific sentence or a sentence range is the appropriate disposition in the case.
No, Your Honor. This is not that is not what this particular agreement is.
Wasn't there a specific range you agreed to recommend?
No, there was no what
0 to 6?
No, that was never actually specifically said. That this is what was the way it worked out, Your Honor, is that in this particular plea agreement, there was a calculation as to what the base offense level was going to be, what his criminal history was based on whether the findings of both the government and the defendant, and that within that particular, when you do the calculations of the base offense level of 6 with the criminal history of 1, led to a projected guideline range of 0 to 6 months. There was never a specific agreement between the government and the defendant as to what the specific sentence should be. All along, it was a projected sentencing range.
Well, you know what facts were going to come out during the trial, didn't you?
I beg your pardon?
You know what facts were going to come out during the trial, didn't you?
Well, I believe that there were, I mean, the government was aware of what the evidence was going to show during the course of that trial.
So that you didn't get surprised, even if the judge did.
I believe that the government was aware of what the evidence would show.
So when you discussed the 0 to 6 projection, you knew all the facts that came out during the trial.
The government had an analysis of what the evidence would show and what the show would show with respect to the defendants.
So that you knew at the time you entered the plea agreement what all the facts were, which led to the 0 to 6 months figure.
That's true.
So from the government's point of view, nothing new came out during the trial that would have compelled you to say, Judge, we made a mistake, which should be more than 6 months.
I think I see where you're. I mean, all along.
Yeah, see where I'm going is all right. I don't care. I want you to see where. I want to find out where you're going.
Well,
I want to. Please. You can follow me along. You knew beforehand, about the facts of the matter that led to the 0 to 6 months. It wasn't until the judge decided that in his position it was different that you changed your mind.
And actually, let me clarify.
Yay or nay?
Nay, in the sense that we consistently argued before the district court that the range should be 0 to 6 months, and in all the pleas.
So the answer is yes. You knew, and so it wasn't until the judge changed his mind that you changed your mind.
Yes, and again, let me.
How hard work did that?
Let me just clarify the government's position is that all along, and after the plea was entered, and after. During the course of the time when the judge indicated that he was considering making the relevant conduct a portion of Mr. Lutis' sentence, the government, acknowledging its responsibilities under the plea agreement, continued to argue before the district court that there was no financial loss and that thus there was no relevant conduct. In fact, defendant in the course of his brief acknowledged that both the defendant and the government consistently argued, jointly, if you will, that the range that the judge should impose was a 0 to 6 month range. Now, the judge, given the discretion that it had under the plea agreement, made a different contrary finding. And while it's certainly true that, you know, reasonable minds might differ as to whether or not, in fact, was relevant finding, the fact that there are reasonable differences doesn't lead to the conclusion that the judge's finding was not clearly erroneous. But I would like to stress that the government consistently, in all of its pleadings, and those pleadings are in the record in this case, the government consistently argued to the district court that the judge, pursuant to the plea agreement, should find that there was no financial loss, and thus there should be no
relevant position.
That is still, I mean, pursuant to the plea agreement, that is the government's position.
Well, there's some government position after the plea agreement. As a matter of fact, there was no loss and nothing should be ascribed to it.
Well, I mean, the government's position is that, you know, we want to be consistent. We had an obligation under the plea agreement.
Mm.
And we continue to argue that position to the district court.
Mm. And so he was wrong and you were right.
That's a tough position to put me in, Your Honor, but I would simply say that reasonable minds could differ as to whether or not that is.
I know you have to reappear before the same judge in the case. I don't expect you to deserve a mid-flight. I just want to know whether you've changed your mind since the.
I guess I could only say is that reasonable minds would differ as to whether or not that.
What you're saying is that you agreed at the time the plea agreement was entered into. Is that right? You agreed with it at the time the plea agreement was entered into. And now that the judge came down with a different decision, it's your feeling that you have to support what he did.
Well, and I believe it's supported by the discretion that was provided to the district court.
Did he abuse his discretion?
I beg your pardon?
That he didn't abuse his discretion.
Correct. That he had, he had the discretion that was provided to him by the plea.
That's your point. You didn't sell out anything. You're safe.
Did the probation department file a recommended sentence prior to the trial, during the trial, after the trial?
I believe that the probation office issued the original pretrial sentence report following the trial.
And what did it recommend?
It was consistent with the plea agreement.
It was
consistent with the plea agreement recommending a 0 to 6 month range.
And it was filed after the trial?
I believe that's correct. I believe it was issued shortly before the January 23rd, 2003 order issued by Judge Hart. I believe that concludes my time. If there are any other questions, but the government respectfully requests that the lower court ruling be affirmed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Eckert.
All right.